You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Here District. Marcus Johnson, joined by my son, Chris Johnson.
What up?
Coming up on today's show, Bob Myers.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
You know, we're talking everything Bucks, all Bucks, all the time. We're following the Bucks on this fantastic voyage, to quote Lakeside Express. And I'm the captain of this vessel. I'm the captain of this vessel, like I like to say. So anyway, it's been an interesting past few games for this team. Yep. Some good things, some not so good things. That West Coast road trip, for example.
Yep.
But one of the things that has really stood out to me, Chris, is that Giannis is doing a lot more screen setting,
mm-hmm.
and has embraced that role. And so listen, I mean, to make that comment, you might say, well, he's getting paid all that money, he should do whatever he's told. But a lot of times a superstar like that, who has been one of the top three or four leaders in the league in usage over the last 5 or 6 years consistently, now you want me to set screens. But Giannis has embraced that role, and I think it's going to help in terms of the synergy that he and Dame are starting to create. We're seeing, and one funny thing too, so in terms of screening and rolling between Giannis and Dame, Doc Rivers in practice, and Dame has talked about this publicly, so I'm not telling things, you know, that I shouldn't be telling.
Uh-oh.
Proprietary information, what stays in practice, or whatever. Anyway, but Dame has talked about this. But Doc Rivers will have Dame and Giannis on one side of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Pick, pop, pass, do it again.
Right.
Pick, pop, penetrate, simplify. Kick out, do it again.
Yeah.
But he keeps them on the same side of the floor. The other three guys just sit on the opposite side, just watching and laughing because they're not involved. But Doc wants them to develop that kind of chemistry between the two of them, and I think I see it kind of bearing some fruit now.
Well, it sounds like when Doc is stripping it down to one side of the floor, and here's what you guys are doing, dudes are over there laughing.
Yeah.
It sounds like a mundane type of drill, but apparently this is done to create high-level chemistry, which is obviously showing on the floor.
Yeah.
My question for you is, why is the fact that Giannis is setting more screens, why does that matter? Like, what does that have to do with the big scheme of the Bucks offense?
Well, so here's a great stat. Patrick Buckets Hanneman had provided for me.
Shout out.
Recently. Buckets. Love Buckets. They call him Buckets because he can shoot like crazy. Can't jump, can't run, can't defend, but man, he can shoot. But anyway, sorry, Buckets. But Giannis's assist rate,
yeah,
to 3-point shooters since the All-Star break, 10.6%. That's his assist rate to 3-point shooters since the All-Star break. You know, off of direct screens. His assist rate to 3-point shooters is number one in the league at 10.6. Number two is Jokic at 10.3%, no other player above 6.5%. So those two are, when they set a screen, it's opening up to more good looks from the 3-point line than any other duo, Giannis and Jokic. And Giannis was, you know, just outside of the top 10 for a long time, but now he's moved up to number one since the All-Star break. So that gives you an idea of how much more he's setting screens, but even more tangibly, the short roll.
Right.
The short roll, bro.
That's the part I'm trying to...
The short roll.
Yeah. So what about the short roll?
The short roll. What is the short roll? Giannis sets the screen for Dame. Dame comes to his right. Giannis rolls quickly between the top of the key and the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
Dame usually has Giannis's defender kind of hedging with
running
him.
Running interference.
The Dame's defender is trying to fight over the screen. Got two guys on Dame, pretty much. And there's a little bit of a window where you can split those two with that pocket pass. Giannis catches it at the free throw line with the pocket pass. Now, all of a sudden, he's got a 3-on-2.
Right.
He got a 3-on-2 in front of him.
And if we as seeing this season, Giannis is passing. What do you attribute to the increase in accuracy and just absolute dimes of Giannis's passing? Has it always been this unbelievable?
No. He's evolving into a much better pass. He's always been a good, solid passer. There's never been a moment where I thought that, oh, this guy can't pass the salted breakfast.
Right.
You can't pass the salted breakfast. But he's always been he's always been a 5 assists a game. Now he's up to a career high, like 6.5 assists a game. And he had one pass, I think it was Sacramento, and it did lead to a made bucket, but he had the ball kind of mid-post on the right side of the floor, and he did one of those Magic Johnson things where he held the ball out and kind of looked to his right like he was going to kick it out AJ Green.
Oh, yeah.
De'Aaron Fox bit and started heading to the right. Giannis all of a sudden switched, turned his hand on top of the ball, threw it to the right corner to Beasley, who missed the three-pointer. But it was the subtleties of that great. And I've seen him, and I always say this, Chris, that one of the big differences between today's game and when I played, and probably when you played, is that, and I think LeBron, I won't say he started it, but he did it as well as anybody and still does. The ability to drive hard left, to be on the far
and
side.
And go back. And the Luka cross body.
Go back, cross your body on a dime and hit that corner three-point shoot on the right side right in his shot pocket. Well,
that's a real pass that they work on, that they develop. That's like a skill set now, that type of pass in the NBA. Because of the way that defenses are set up and the spacing now, you have to make that pass as a creator.
Yeah, and oftentimes you'll see guys working on their core with these big
black, the Russian twists. The Russian
things.
Twists.
But and all that is...
They're called Russian twists. So they can turn like that.
All that is that a part turn. Of getting that strength in that core. So you can make that turn and throw that thing on a string. So Giannis is doing a tremendous job of that. He's just making unbelievable passes. And I really see the chemistry between he and Dame improving at the offensive end, just playing off each other, learning each other, playing off each other.
I'm all about the improvement. But, we can't not talk about what happened on the road trip. Give me your just Vance perspective in a nutshell of what happened on the 1-3.
Well, they got away from the toughness that they had exhibited when they went 6-0 right after the All-Star break. And you can talk about the competition, but they beat the Timberwolves the first game back and went up to Minnesota and played a great game. Also, I think beat the Clippers sandwiched in between the Charlotte twice and the Bulls once. So they played some really good competition at the beginning and end of those streaks. So I just think the toughness that I talked about, I mean, you asked me were the Bucks the most physical team in the NBA, and at the time, being a prisoner of the moment, the way they were playing at that moment, they were. But I think human nature, whatever it is, it was hard to sustain that on the road trip. Plus, Giannis went into the Golden State game on the questionable list because of an Achilles or something going on.
For sure.
Steve Kerr reads that too.
Wounded dog.
And they came out running and
wounded
gunning.
Animal. I mean,
and Jonathan Kuminga, they came out every transition, make or miss. They were Draymond taking out, pushing up real quick. And they were using their speed. And that's always been for the most part of the season. We've improved on that area a lot under Doc, but kind of had some regression. And so that was the regression that we had at Golden State. Just an ugly game that I didn't expect, didn't see coming. Played better against the Lakers. We should have won that game. There was some miscommunication between Brooke and Dame on how to play D'Angelo Russell. I thought they should have got the ball out of his hands and double-teamed him, but hit a tough floater. Had a great game. Had, 40-plus points against us and just carried
44.
Just carried that team. And then played solidly against the Clippers for a win, even though they were shorthanded, then came back and the Kings did something similar that the Warriors did. They just went up in transit. Mike Brown, part of that Warriors system, did something similar. Teams that have that high post fulcrum of a player, like Draymond,
splits,
Sabonis, top of the key, splits, curls. I mean, that can make the defense a lot more challenging and confusing in terms of communication, how you're going to play it. And I thought that we had kind of fell victim to some of that.
What's the Bucks' most effective defense towards that type of attack?
Zone is probably the most effective, and we're seeing more zone defense. And I tell you what I like in that zone is when Dame and Pat Beverly is what he wants to be called. So I will accede to his wishes.
So wait, say it again.
Pat Beverly and Dame.
He wants to be called what?
Pat, as opposed to Patrick.
No, okay. Pat Bev. Pat Beverly.
Yeah,
okay.
Pat.
Just making
sure. So it's all good.
Okay.
So Pat Beverly, who is from Marshall High School in Chicago, West Side. Same school.
William Gates? Oh, no. Arthur Agee.
Let it rain, man. Let it rain. Hoop Dreams, come on.
Wait, that's his dad? Was that?
No.
That was him.
That was okay. Make It Rain was the father.
His father.
They're playing one-on-one.
Unforgettable.
And the mom and the other.
It's funny. Any basketball movies with dad and son, like, what's the other one? Great Santini?
The Great Santini.
Throwing the ball off his head.
Yeah, little girl. Come on, little girl.
Oh, let's get back. I love. There. Okay, sorry, I digress.
No, you know, I'm sure it reminds you of a lot of our battles up in the front yard in our Bel Air palatial estate that Peggy Lee once owned.
No question.
Anyway, but I digress. But the fact that Pat Bev, when he's playing at the top of that zone with Dame, his communication skills, his anticipatory acumen on defense, meaning that he kind of knows, you know, what the action is going to be before it's run. So he puts himself in a good position. He knows when to trap and when to blitz a screen, when to hold, when to switch with Dame. It's pre-switching. It's he and Dame are starting to play some effective defense out top, and that's a good thing to see. So so zone defenses are an answer, but you can't play that. Conventional wisdom says, you know, more than, you know, if you play it 10 times, 12 times a game like Miami used to do a couple of years ago, that's a lot of zone.
Sure.
And so, but you can, and the Bucks, what Doc is doing, and this is what good coaches do. They don't tip their hands in the first quarter.
Right.
They let the game kind of play out.
Yeah.
Because these guys are so good on this level. Darvin Ham taught me this when he was an assistant with Milwaukee. I was like, why don't you just throw your best defense at your opponent right off the bat? He said, because, Mark, these guys are so good, they will adjust to it and start ripping it to shreds. What you do is you let the game build up, and then you throw, something in the last 5-6 minutes that they haven't seen. And hopefully it'll take them 2 or 3 minutes to make an adjustment. By that time, you can make a run, get some buckets at the offensive end, and get the momentum in your favor.
I think it's amazing just how, like, Pat Bev, we get to see him, hear from him after the games, watch him, and then listen to his teammates. Well-respected guys like Giannis and Dame describe his effect on the locker room and on the floor. That stands out the most to me this season. It's like you realize just that Pat Bev is so much more than just a gimmick.
Yeah.
He's so much more than some guy talking a bunch of junk on a podcast. He's a highly experienced, high IQ veteran that, like you say, when he's reading plays, he knows where to go. If he's backing up Dame Lillard as that free safety to Dame's strong safety or vice versa, you know, that is an effective partner in crime that will make up for a lot of mistakes that you may make out there because he's got your back at all times.
Well, you look at his, I always like to look at a guy's kind of basketball journey. And so Pat Bev averaged 38 points a game in high school.
He was a scorer.
Extraordinaire. The Windy City, he was, you know, buckets. Went to Arkansas, became a defensive player.
Yeah.
Okay. Got into some trouble at Arkansas.
Okay.
A little bit of trouble. Not major.
Hey, got
major,
out of it. He owned up to it.
And, you know, it's the kind of trouble that if they would have, you know, caught me on several final exams at UCLA, maybe I would. Anyway, I digress.
Neither here nor there.
neither here nor there. History of the Turks and the Ottoman Empire and Cornish Franklin.
History of the Turks.
Ottoman Empire.
The same class,
Yeah.
Actually, mine was Uzbek. We studied the language Uzbek, so I'm fluent in Uzbek.
I almost wrote her name down on my paper. I was writing so much of the same. Anyway, that's a long story.
Come on. Statue of limitations.
Statue of limitations over with. But the point is, then he goes over. So then he leaves school and then goes over to like Russia and all these places in Eastern Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And then he pays, I think, $1 million on a buyout.
To get out of the deal.
Some kind of way there's this buyout for $1 million. And so I don't know how he comes up with whatever it was, but he buys out his contract so he can come back to the NBA.
I think it was for a tryout, right? Was it for a tryout?
It may have been for a tryout.
Or was it
Houston
to sign?
Somebody.
It was a buyout so he can actually just get an opportunity to prove himself.
To prove himself.
I believe. He bet on himself.
He bet on himself. And that's the kind of dude he is. He's always bet on himself. And
that's
even
confidence.
You know, and when he was traded to the Bucks, I mean, he sent a tweet out to Cameron Payne. Man, hurry up and take your physical. I want to play tonight. You know, and at 35 years old, veteran, you know, guys will kind of meander around and take their time 2 or 3 days. I got to, you know, move this, move that. I got to get settled, blah, blah. He's like, I want to play tonight. And he played that night. And he grabbed Doc's clipboard, started drawing up plays. Doc's like, give me back my clipboard. But that's the beauty of him, this constant energy and intellect. He's one of the smartest basketball players you'll be around. And the fact that he's willing to communicate that intellect to players young and old, superstars and role players, doesn't matter. He's always talking. You can watch him on the bench, talking to Giannis, talking to Chris, talking to AJ Green, talking to Andre Jackson Jr. He's talking to everybody. And that's a good thing. That's what this team needed. They needed a guy not only with that kind of energy and intensity on the floor, but a guy that vocally was not intimidated by anybody and was willing to kind of share his knowledge and experience with his teammates.
But when you say that, it makes me think back to the championship team. Now, I think about that roster. Now, did they have a guy that was vocal like that in the locker room, or was it more a guy that just demonstrated that on with his play?
Well, look, that team didn't coalesce until March when we picked up P.J. Tucker.
P.J. Tucker brings a variety of Pat Bevish energy, that doggish up in you, will harass, will bother, will cajole.
We'll talk to the officials.
All day.
And Pat Connaughton even said back then, just watching P.J.'s approach defensively gave him the motivation to buckle down in the post, realizing that he could battle bigger, stronger players. It's just about getting lower, getting strong, getting
tough.
Can we
talk about that for a second? Because that's something I think is very important, though. The motivation. When you're a Connington or you're somebody else that might not be this guy that's a defensive stalwart, if you will, and you see Pat Bev locking in, why does that inspire guys to play above their sort of pay grade defensively?
Well, it just shows you that it can be done. You know, and Pat Bev is not the most athletic. He's not to the top of the backboard, he's all effort and energy and intellect. Yeah. Effort, energy, and intellect. Don't leave out intellect. Just being smart enough to look at film, to study film, study players, to know tendencies, to know where I'm supposed to be, to know how to get in those gaps, to keep a guy from driving. But to know that if I get into this gap, I still got to recover to my three-point shooter who I'm leaving open, you know, so I can only get into a gap so much. He knows all of that stuff from his experience of playing with so many great players. And that's why guys play vets. That's why Doc plays vets. Pat Connaughton, Pat Bev, and you see less and less of Andre Jackson Jr. Marshawn Beauchamp, now A.J. Green is kind of fitting to the rotation. Sure. But because vets have an understanding that young players don't. So that's it. But anyway, man, good conversation. And we will continue with even more good conversation. We've got a special guest coming in that is going to be such a treat to have here. One of your old buddies from your UCLA days.
Bob
Myers, one of the most accomplished NBA executives and a guy that's doing a terrific job as a broadcaster. He makes it look so easy, man. I always want to project
He's smooth,
it like,
man.
Like,
he's got the good hair, the great smile, 6'6", you know, Bob. He was always the man.
All right.
Bob was always the man.
All right, Bob Myers coming up next here on the Here District.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right, we're back here on the Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson. We're joined by a very special guest.
Maybe not. I could
call you that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bob Myers, former Golden State Warrior general manager that did such an outstanding job putting together that unit up there that was so successful. And he's a current ESPN NBA analyst. And maybe most importantly, was a teammate of Chris's on that 1995 national championship team. Welcome to the Here District, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
No, thank you,
Bob.
Appreciate it. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. I don't know what you guys are going to ask me.
Hey, you left out NBA Executive of the Year.
That don't matter.
It matters to me. Okay. That is my teammate. Yeah. That was my lifting partner.
My bad.
My team buddy.
It's not on my notes. It's not in the notes.
It says Bob Myers notes, and this was not.
I left it out. I'm going to leave now because I'm upset.
You need to be.
What year was that?
I don't know.
Executive? You know.
I'll tell you
back
what.
Back to back.
Listen.
Back to back executive?
Let me tell you guys. Please. Let me tell you one thing about that award, okay? What people don't realize. I don't know what years I won, but I know what year I didn't win. We went 73-9, guys. And I didn't win executive of the year. That tells you about the award. I mean, what else are you supposed to do? I thought that I had a good year that year.
I mean, you added KD.
By the way,
a little bit salty.
Yeah, they vote. Now, that was 16. That was pre-KD.
Pardon.
Yeah, that was the 3-1 up on
the Cavs. Yeah, well, we don't talk about what happened after.
3-1 up on the Cavs.
We don't know. I'm just talking about the regular season.
What was the vote taken?
Hey, Marcus, that's a regular season award. They don't vote. By the way, I always say the executive of the year is the team to win the championship. That's who the executive of the year was.
Right.
So, but anyways, whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but first things first, I want you to know, and Chris, you've got just such a closed mouth friend. I've been trying to pry this Mexican spring break trip you guys took.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And he just refuses to give me any
It wasn't
advice.
Anything to really be proud of, to be honest.
I think it's a lack of recollection. We don't remember.
His brain cells burned. Disintegrated.
I'll tell you what. On that trip, I've told this story. So we did, Chris and I and a couple other teammates from UCLA, we went down to Cabo San Lucas. You know, normal college spring break stuff. Yeah. So it was fun. We had a good time. So my birthday was always right around spring break. Okay, so this is the payphone era for the kids listening. We used to have to go to payphones. So we all went out to TGI Fridays, and I told the guys, I said, it's my birthday tonight. And they said, that's great, let's celebrate. So all day we're drinking at the beach, and we go to TGI Fridays, and when it's your birthday, they give you the sundae and the candle and whole thing. So we did all that, and I woke, I said, this is a great birthday. You know, we all went to bed. And then I woke up the next day. I said, I forgot to call my parents on my birthday. So I go to a payphone. I call my mom and dad. I said, hey, guys, I'm sorry. I just forgot to call. We were out. And my mom goes, son, it's your birthday today. So, yeah, Marcus, I ran back to the guys. I go, guess what? We're going back to TGI Fridays. We're getting another Sunday.
We can do it all over
which
again.
Which is, you know, you get a call from your kid, and they don't know it's their birthday on spring. But that's not perfect. That's not a great story. But all good fun. Yeah, all good, clean fun.
And just quickly, for the people out there that don't know, tell them what kind of player your friend here, your roommate, Chris Johnson.
Oh, he was fantastic.
At UCLA. And
Chris, well, I don't know if people listening but or watching, but what you did, Chris, when you showed up, if the game still had a post game, but it was evolving, right? And you were probably an undersea. You were like a Barkley type of player, like on the block. Unbelievable player. Unbelievable touch, skills, footwork. And then you realized, I think, what was it, after your sophomore year, you had to change your body.
Yeah.
And you became more perimeter oriented, and we're great at that too. But no, Chris had we one thing I always remember that he did was obviously he's a volatile teammate, Marcus. And my locker was next to his.
That's an understatement.
And he was up and down. Like, as a teammate, he'd yell at me one day, and the next day he wanted to be my best friend.
Sorry,
I said,
Bob,
I can't ride this emotional roller coaster.
Sorry,
with you.
Bob.
Yeah, no, so you know how before practice, you know, you're at the basket and you're laying the ball up, getting loose. And Chris came up to me one day. He goes, you got an awful mess around game. Meaning, like, I was like, what does that mean? He goes, when you're warming up, you look nasty. I always remember him saying that. You got an awful mess around game,
awful
which I actually think
game.
I do. I think he was right. I think I was right. He's a great teammate.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's great stuff. Yeah. That's great stuff. So, all right, let's jump into it, man. The reason you're here, we want to get some insights from your valuable experience as an NBA executive of the year back-to-back. In terms of the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, do you think teams will try to build themselves around acquiring defenders to stop him, to slow him down, to guard him? Is that something that you tried to do or teams try to do against you guys when you were at Golden State and Steph and Clay and that whole deal? What's the approach in terms of how a general manager thinks?
Would try to stop Giannis or try to deal with him?
You know, like LeBron, the teams would load up
personnel,
load up on
personnel
big wings or whatever. Defensive wings. When I was playing, the Celtics picked up Dennis Johnson, so Sidney Moncrief would have a guy that would be the same size that could possibly neutralize him. So there was always this thought process back then. Is that still prevalent? You were doing it.
I mean, you do it more, I think, in your conference. I mean, you build. You feel like you got to get through. If you're in the Western Conference right now, you're probably looking at Jokic, and you realize you're not going to be able to stop this guy. So how do you slow him down? Maybe, but you really can't, and you can't slow down Giannis either. So then it's about how do you exploit their weaknesses if they have any. Not Giannis's, because I don't know that he has any. But you look at their team, the Bucks, and you say, well, we're looking at the Bucks. The best players in the NBA are not people that can be contained, and Giannis is certainly one of them. But you look at them, you say, where can we go at the Bucks? Right, where is their weakness? You know, do we bring Lopez out, extend him out? Do we try to bring him out? And if you're the Warriors, you'd say, let's get Curry in space with Lopez and deal with that. But then, you know, the Bucks figure out, well, we're gonna try to put Giannis on a non-shooter, and he's gonna protect the paint then. So it's a chess match. But when you look at it from that point, Marcus, when you just say, how do you stop Giannis? You don't stop Giannis. You just try to say, like you said, you build a wall in transition. You can't guard him one-on-one. You got to get back. You got to put a lot of bodies on him. You decide whether you want to double-team him or not. You decide, hey, can we take charges on him? Can we get him in foul trouble? But otherwise, his people don't realize, and you know because you cover him, his passing has gotten so much better. Yeah. What is he, 6 assists a game? So what used to be, let's make him a passer, he has gotten better and better at that. So, look, guys like that, you don't really stop a Giannis Antetokounmpo. You can't.
Yeah. I mean, he's number one, Bob, to your point. And I just got this stat from our analytics guy, Patrick Buckets Hanneman back in Milwaukee. But he's number one in potential assist to
3-point shooters after the All-Star break, like 10.6%, you know, to potential 3-point shooters, potential assists, and number one by far. Actually, I mean, he's number one, and the number two guy is trailing. So just the fact that he's improved his game. Now, as a general manager, I mean, you sound like you really kind of plug in. You have to plug into what's going on the floor, what kind of defense you're playing, what strategies are working. Is that something that you and Steve Kerr would have meetings about, and he'd share with you his approach, and you might say, I don't like that approach, Steve, try something else. Have you ever done that?
Well, of course. And I think that goes back to when the Bucks in the offseason decided to make a big move, right? And you trade Holiday for Dame Lillard, and you say, okay, what are we giving up and what are we getting? I think they knew to some degree we're giving up some defense for some offense. And the Bucks' identity was always a defensive identity. And so you say, how are we going to overcome the lack of that perimeter defense which the Holiday brought?
Right.
And so what I think the Bucks would look at is say, okay, now we're going to have a pick-and-roll threat with Dame and Giannis, mm-hmm. right? That's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But how do we make up for the defense? And if you look at the Bucks right now, we just did a segment, fifth in offense in the NBA, which is great. That's a good thing. But I think 14th or something in defense or something not so great defensively. And so that's a big shift. And you know the Bucks. Just you're not feeling them as much defensively, right? And you could say, well, why is that? Middleton being out, I think, has been a big issue with feeling them defensively. But for the Bucks to do what they do, they got Lillard to have that half-court threat of pick and roll with Giannis, which I think is great. How are they going to stop people?
Right.
Because that's been the inconsistency of the Bucks team. So when you're a GM, you're always looking at it from a standpoint of, where do I have to shore up this team? Take Steph Curry, for example. When I got there, it was almost like, how do you best utilize Steph? We made what we thought was a good decision early in that let's get a big ball handler on the ball with Curry so we can move him off the ball. So Draymond's part of that, but that was also Iguodala and Sean Livingston. Because Curry could be on the ball, but he could be off the ball. We thought, who can we put out there with him that allows him to be off the ball? You can't put a guy that can't pass.
Right.
You can't put a guy that can't handle. So we tried to build it that way. So that's what you try to do when you're building a team. And you know, you guys both played, you know when you were fit into the right team.
Right.
Because it's not a one-man game. So you knew, wow, when I was on that team, it all clicked. Because this guy did this and this guy did that. And when you have all that, usually you win. And when you don't, you lose, no matter how good the individual talent is.
Yeah. And to that point, just to keep it in context, I mean, the Bucks were like 20th, 21st, I think, when Doc took over. So there's been some improvement defensively. Now kind of middle of the pack, 14th, 15th. But to that point, Patrick Beverley, I mean, I'm watching, Bob, the two of them, Dame and Patrick Beverley, especially in the 2-3 zone, which I know you can't play a whole lot of in this league.
Yeah.
But you know, that can't be your primary defense. But Patrick Beverley, I think, makes Dame a better defender with his anticipatory powers to understand.
Or it makes him look good.
But it's communication. He's a talker. He talks all the time. He's always engaged. He's always locked in. Now, I don't know, you know, where it's gonna land. You know, how far that's gonna take the Bucks. But it seems to be, as you were talking about, that was the move that was made to kind of help.
Yeah.
Take some of the slack off of that defensive effort out top.
Yeah, I think Middleton is huge, like I said. I mean, they need him. His defense carried the Bucks, I think, partly to the championship. You know, what he was able to do, he's this really – Doc Rivers, I talked to him last week before, said Middleton's one of the smartest players he's ever had. And so when you're smart on defense, you can make up for maybe some loss of lateral quickness or whatever it is because he's always in the right place.
Right.
Beverley, the thing about Beverley that he's a tone setter. And he has earned credibility amongst superstars where he can go to a Lillard or a Giannis and say, you got to be better.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and not many guys can do that.
That's a great point.
I think you
made that point on TV, too, about Pat Bev. That's a great point about him because not everybody just has a voice, right? Pat Bev has earned that, and dudes listen to him when he talks.
Yeah, and again, it's for whatever reason, because you know what? I think they know that he's going to do the same thing. And he just wants to win.
Right.
He just wants to win. And so, but this Bucks team, 15 games, however many games to go, I think that they got to figure out, it's been a lot of up and down, right? And you don't want to make a coaching change. Nobody wants to do that in the middle of a season or halfway through. So I believe going into the playoffs, can they stay healthy here with Middleton for the last stretch? Can they figure out some cohesiveness amongst those three guys with Doc, Coach, and Middleton? And see what they can do in the playoffs. there's still going to be a problem, right? Yeah. You got one of the best five players in Giannis in the NBA on your team, who's a best five. He's a top five offensive and defensive player. Right. He's not a one-sided Facts. Player. So Facts. That's a dangerous thing to go up against.
Bob, when you have – and last thing on the on this part of it, when you have a guy like A.J. Green who's come on, gives the Bucks a lot of young legs, good energy when he comes in the game, how difficult is it for Doc to incorporate youth – over experience in a situation like that? Because obviously AJ Green has a value. How difficult is that sort of decision making process for Doc?
I think he's an option for Doc. I saw him use him against the Clippers, that home win against the Clippers, right, where AJ played most of the fourth quarter and he was great.
Yep.
So he's a guy, I think a lot of coaches have the guy that they say, I'm gonna give him a shot.
Yeah.
But against the Warriors, I think a few nights later they put him in and he didn't have the same impact on the game.
Right.
So guys like that in the playoffs, I always say in each round your rotation shrinks by one player. Hmm. So what you can play, let's say you can play 10 in the first round.
Facts.
And you can play 9. Then the East Conference Finals, you play 8.
Why is that?
Competition gets harder and harder, right? So I always use the example of let's take AJ, for example. In the first round, you're a shooter. You may have 12 inches of space to get a shot up.
Right.
In 1 second. In this next round, you got 10, 8. All of a sudden, the finals, you got 2 inches and half a second.
Right.
And that changes everything. Or all of a sudden, the guy you're guarding or the team you're going up against is an elite defensive team. And, I mean, it's we've all played basketball. Marcus, this didn't happen to probably you two guys. But what people don't realize is at some point in the playoffs, your talent runs out.
Yeah.
Now, it probably didn't happen to you. And I don't know if it happened to you, Chris, but – at some point, I know it did with me all the time. And so you go back to the bench, or you look at your teammates, you go, I can't do anything with this guy.
Right.
can't do anything. So it also happens in the NBA, where you might find a guy that's the 8th, 9th man, the first round, 10th man, and if he's being honest, he comes back and he plays in the Eastern Conference, Western Conference Finals, and he looks at the coach and he goes, what are you doing? He goes, I cannot guard him. Like, I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So it shrinks.
Well, and here's a story that relates to that. So we're playing the Atlanta Hawks, early '80s, best out of five playoff series. They had the best out of five in those days. So the Hawks are beating the crap out of us. It's 2-2. We're in a film session. We just lost two in Atlanta. So we're watching film, and Don Nelson is sitting back smoking a cigarette. So Mike Dunleavy Sr. is guarding Doc Rivers, of all people. So Doc catches, blows by him to the right, dunks. Nelly just erupts. God dang it, Dunleavy, what the hell are you doing? We told you to force him left. A couple of possessions later, Doc blows by him again. Yeah. Layup.
Yeah.
Damn it, Dunleavy, don't you read the freaking scouting report? What the hell? Third time, Doc catches, blows by him again, passes for an assist. Nelly takes a pause, deep drag, and says, hell, he's just better than you.
No, it's funny. On that point, that's a great story. And you know, two coaches now, they moved on to coaching. It's funny when you be calling a game, which you both have probably done, and a guy beats a guy to the basket, and he gets his shot thrown in the stands, and you go, what happened? You go, he ran out of town. he just ran out of town.
Got to use that. Yeah. He did everything he could do, but just ran out of town. Yeah. So anyway, but now, and you've had intimate experience with this. So the Bucks win it in 2021. I mean, what makes it so difficult? How difficult is it to repeat? I mean, what are some of the challenges that you have? Do you have to change and upgrade and keep
up
with what everybody else is doing? You pay attention to all that?
Yeah, I think harder now than ever because of the noise around a team, the noise inside a team, the noise outside a team, what pressure you face. I think Denver's actually doing a pretty good job of just keeping that out this year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're under the radar. When I was with the Warriors, and I don't know how it was with the Bucks, when we won, there was such a renewed scrutiny on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of a sudden we went from 2 beat writers to 12, and every single thing you do, every single exchange between the coach. Remember when Spoelstra and LeBron went to Miami, and he walked by Spoelstra and they brushed shoulders. And it was like the biggest story, of the week.
Right.
Like you start getting that kind of scrutiny, and that makes it harder on a team. Every little slight, every loss. Everything is heightened. And so also the expectation and the fatigue, right? The playoffs are exhausting. And so you go 3 months of playoffs, then you have a short off season, and you come right back, and maybe that hunger is different. So you got to find it again. I mean, what's amazing about the Nuggets, though, coming off of what they did, and I think the Bucks is a little different. I can talk about that next. But they lost some of their bench, and the Nuggets seem to be playing great. I think they're 10-1 out of the break. They got what might be the best player in the NBA right now in Jokic. So – the Bucks, though, when in 22, I believe, injury cost you guys in the playoffs, right? It was injury.
Yeah.
Because you lost Boston in East Conference Final. Or is it second round? Second round, well, lost the 22?
We lost to Boston in the
semis. But wasn't
somebody
out?
Well, the last year, Giannis was hurt against Miami.
But I'm talking about the year before.
Chris Middleton went
was
down.
Hurt, yeah. And that's it. But you cannot win.
Yeah. No. He went out against Chicago. He was done. Done deal.
One time I ran into somebody, I forget, we had played in the finals, and somehow health came up. And they said, well, you guys, the other team lost. And somebody said, hey, you guys were healthy. I said, yeah, but that's part of the – if you win a championship, you're all health. I mean, tell me a team that's won a championship with a rotation guy out, with a starter out. You don't do it.
No. Right.
I mean, it doesn't happen. So you got to assume health when you're trying to win a championship. If you're missing a key starter in any round in the second, third, you're not winning. It's too important. Right. So it's hard.
And speaking of the Bucks, I mean, and you had the experience when KD came to the Warriors, putting two alpha dog superstars like that together. I mean, what are the challenges that the Bucks are looking at with Dame and Giannis? Just from an executive standpoint, what kind of stuff are you looking at?
I think what one thing is that how much time it takes more than you think. It's not as simple as throw this guys out there and we're going to win and we're going to play great. They're still trying to figure it out. I think that it's hard. I mean, you look at Phoenix still trying to figure out Beal. I mean, could you say Dallas has figured out Kyrie and Luka? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, so that's where Denver has an advantage. They're not trying to figure anything out. But some of these teams took Minnesota a year to figure out Gobert and Towns and Edwards. They kind of figured out now, but that's what it takes. So I would argue Dame and Giannis will be better next year together. The question is, will Lopez and Middleton and the other guys be better? But if you had just asked me in a bubble – will Dame and Giannis have a better feel for each other next season? Not even close.
Yeah.
Problem's going to be, what's the supporting cast look like next season? So that's why they got to capitalize on this season.
And when you're putting together like alpha dogs, strong personalities, you had a situation in Golden State where you had Draymond Green, Clay, Steph. Out here in Milwaukee, you have Dame, Giannis, Chris Middleton. Does it matter the type of guys
of course, are
in the big three, or is that irrelevant? So it does matter.
Yeah, we were doing a show the other day. Somebody asked me that question, and I told Stephen A. and I told Wilbon, I said, this show would suck if it was for Stephen A's or for me or for you guys if you were doing play-by-play and color, or if there was five of you on the court. It matters who what kind of game do you have, right? Who's complimentary of each other. But then it matters who you are, because, you know, you need leadership. You need a voice. We talked about Pat Beverly. We talked about Lillard's voice is different than Giannis' voice, is different than Brooks' voice, is different than Middleton's voice.
Yeah.
But it all has to work where you can't have the same guy. You can't have five quiet guys.
Right.
Right? You got to have one guy. Maybe that's Pat Bev. Maybe that's Giannis. I don't know who that is on the Bucks, but there's got to be a guy that brings that kind of edge, sets the edge to a team. And so when you look at the personality of a team, you got to have a baseline of competitiveness, because nobody wins anything if you don't want to compete. But beyond that, who is going to challenge the team? Who is going to set that tone of, we're going to win this game. We're going to do whatever it takes to win this game. If you don't have guys like that in the most competitive leagues in the world, you don't win. You can't win, no matter how talented you are.
And that comes into play when you're making roster decisions on who you're going to sign, and how, when you're building a team, you're taking not just game and plugging in guys and roles on the court, but you're plugging in guys and roles in the locker room as well.
Oh, yeah. Look at the Bucks. I mean, Bobby Portis and Brooke Lopez are completely different personalities. Right. But the Bucks are good because Bobby brings what he brings in energy.
Yeah.
Bobby's got a nice looking game. He's a good player. But part of his value to that team is the energy that he brings. And so when you look at a team and you go, well, should we sign Portis? You might say, we need some energy. We need some juice on this team. And those guys are always, you got Caruso on the Bull. He's one of those guys. You need guys that kind of have that tenacity that you can rely on. Because if you don't, Holiday was that guy for the Bucks for a long time.
For sure.
Just relentless. The relentlessness he guarded with was contagious.
Okay.
And so finding those guys, but Holiday's personality was super stoic.
Right.
Like low key. But you could always know he's always going to show up. He's always going to be there. So it's figuring out how to balance all that stuff. It's not perfect, but that's what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Listen, man, you talk about juice. And you're working with one of the most energetic. Listen, I work with Stephen A. at Fox Sports. When he first started to ascend to who he is today, and I couldn't stand the dude, man. Because he would always I'd give my brilliant analysis, and he'd come back, yeah, well, that's a bunch of garbage markets. Bottom line is they stink up the Stephen joint, a. blah, 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 blah. And they used to spring him on me. They wouldn't tell me I was working out. I was working with him on a given night. You got this team and that team, Mark. I get on the air, and then all of a sudden Stephen A. shows up in a little small. I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. And we actually got into it on the air one day. He was talking about Jack Haley is not a ball player. I was like, where did you
rest
play?
In peace.
Rest in peace. Where did you play? You played with those pencils and typewriters in college. And the crew gave me a standing ovation. Now here's the point I'm making.
Jeez, Dad.
It was in New Jersey, Rutherford, East Rutherford. The Lakers were playing the Nets. I got stuck out at the arena, Byrne Arena, Brendan Byrne Arena, out in East Rutherford. Had to get back to New York City, Times Square, staying at the Marriott. Didn't have a ride. Everybody had left. I don't know what I was doing. All of a sudden, I see Stephen A. And I was like, oh, boy, this is the only guy that, you know. So I didn't ask him, but he came up to me. He was like, you need a ride back to the city. I'm going to Brooklyn, going to my mother's house or something. So we ride together in his BMW. I'll never forget this. About a 30, 35, 40-minute ride. And we just have the greatest conversation. Yeah. He was a totally different guy. Just your experience, man. And you do a great job. You do a great job just keeping those guys in check as much as you can. But what's it like?
Well, he has figured out. He might be the best entertainer in sports.
Yeah, I mean,
he might be in the United States. I mean, so something's working. And I think what you said is interesting because he is not yelling at the waiter when the food comes. What do you mean this? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Fact of the matter is, the steak is medium well.
That is not what's happening. So, but on TV, which is entertainment, people don't want to watch, the same monotone
and energy. Different personalities to kind of work off each other.
But I love Stephen A. being on the show because that's not my personality.
Right.
But if it's a good yin and yang, you know, and if you look at it that way and you go, wow, I can play off this and make it interesting. And he has his angle that are these big picture kind of hard takes. And then I kind of look at it more subtly or nuanced and say, well, hang on a second here. That ain't right.
Yeah.
But to your point of decency and picking you up and taking you home and talking sports, I told him the other day, his stories about Iverson, his stories about Larry Brown. I mean, you got to remember, he worked his way up.
He did.
He's a hard working guy. So I respect the work ethic. And honestly, he's been really great to work with. He has.
The final point with Stephen A., the Lakers are playing the Sixers in the finals. So they asked Jack Haley for his prediction. He said sweep. They asked me. I said, yeah, I'll follow Jack sweep. They asked Stephen A. He said, AI gonna get you one. AI gonna get you one. And AI
got him one. He got him one.
He marched over Tyronn Lue and hit that jumper. And
so
that kind of springboard him into being a guy that people took seriously
in terms
of his evaluation skills.
We got time for one more.
Yeah,
for
go ahead.
One more for you. Just about the UCLA experience, being around that championship level, high level program, high level talent. Did anything about your experience at UCLA help you during your career as far as not only as an agent, but then as you ascended up as to be a GM as well?
For sure. I remember you were there. You were a freshman and won the championship.
Right.
So I was a sophomore. So the year before, we lost to Tulsa in Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah.
And Ed O'Bannon was the best player on the team. And he was, for people that do remember, he was the best player coming out of high school.
Yeah, for sure.
He was supposed to go to UNLV, commits to UCLA. So this was not a one-and-done era. So Ed O'Bannon had a very good junior year. So we were halftime down. The game was in Oklahoma City, so the fans were all for Tulsa. I think it was a 12-5 matchup. At halftime, we come in, and we're down 25 at half.
Yeah.
First round of the NCAA tournament.
I was there.
You were there, yeah. So Ed O'Bannon, who's the most mild-mannered guy, comes in the locker room and starts going crazy, throwing stuff. I can't go back to L.A. I can't show my face in that city after this. This ain't never happening again. And so we were all oh my God. And Coach Herrick walked in and saw it and walked out. He which was great. He let Ed finish.
I'm out of here.
You know how the coaches walk in there and they see the player, they go, okay.
Gottfried, roll your arm, turn around.
So it was crazy because nobody said a word. Because Ed, that's so out of character.
Yeah.
You know, so we still lose the game, right? And then Ed had to make a decision to come back or go pro. And he probably would have been a lottery pick.
Yeah.
He said, I'm coming back to school, win a championship. Our quest to win a championship before you guys showed up, Chris, started that halftime.
Yeah.
That's when it started. Yeah. And people say, how do you win a championship? It's all the little things like that. Right. So what did I learn, Chris? Leadership.
Yes.
I saw a guy, he was remember conditioning your freshman year?
Yeah.
He won every drill.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
He won every drill.
I couldn't believe it.
Every drill.
Yeah. No coach
and didn't say a word.
Yeah.
And didn't say a word, and set a tone in practice and decided how it was going to be. And we went 31-2 or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And he was dying. And I remember at times in the run, Coach Herrick would call back to the huddle and he'd say, Ed O'Bannon has to touch the ball in every possession.
Yeah.
Every possession. So I saw a team get behind somebody who everybody wanted to get behind. So leadership, Chris, leadership.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, man, we appreciate you stopping by. We know you got to get back to work. And, man, we wish we could keep you here all day.
Yep.
Some good stuff, man, and continued success in this second career of yours, which you're doing an outstanding job.
Thanks for having me, guys. Right, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob Myers, thank you.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.